You've tuned in to the Get Connected podcast with Mike Agarbo and Carmi Levy. We've got a lot of tech to talk today. A lot of technology stories have happened over the week. Everything from Google saying that they're going to destroy browsing data to settle a consumer privacy lawsuit. Amazon is ditching one of their interesting technologies, the Just Walk Out technology that allows you to shop without using your wallet. Also, Apple finally bringing RCS to the iPhone in the fall, which Google has confirmed. I think Google's very excited about that. And also, New York City's going to test AI gun detectors on the subway. It's time to get connected. Carmi, thanks for joining us on the program.
Great to be with you, Mike. Thanks for having me.
This was an interesting story. Google, they have a browsing mode on their Google Chrome browser. I use it often. And the idea behind the incognito mode is that it's not tracking you as you kind of meander through the web to the different websites. But it looks like it was kind of tracking you. So the U.S., launched I guess there was a class action lawsuit in the U.S. Launched in 2020. And as part of the settlement, Google has to delete billions of data entries on that now.
Yeah, it turns out incognito or private mode isn't so incognito or private after all. Google kind of got caught with its hands in the data cookie jar, despite the fact that users were turning this feature on in the Chrome browser, thinking that the browser then wasn't going to track their activities. Google was continuing to capture information on those browsing sessions, and it was storing that information not on the device, not on your laptop or your desktop, but it was storing it in its data centers. And so that was a bit of an eye-opener when the class action lawsuit was launched way back in 2020. Was up until then, we all thought, well, when I turn incognito or private mode on, it is incognito and private. And we learned then that is not the case. And as this case has moved through the courts, it's become increasingly clear and very murky about what Google says it does and ultimately what it does do. And it's an eye-opener for me. I think it should be an eye-opener for everybody who uses a browser, is that there is no way to fly completely below the radar, that if you think that you're going to do something that you don't want anyone else to see online, and you think that incognito mode is that sort of magic bullet that will protect you from that kind of surveillance or data surveillance, I think you've got another thing coming. And now Google is doing the right thing. They're deleting a huge chunk of that data. They're not saying if it's all of it, though, but they're saying large amounts that they had been collecting over the years when people were in incognito mode. And so good on them. But I suspect it isn't something that they really wanted to do, because for a company like Google, it's all about data. And they're rather grudgingly admitting that they tried to push a little bit too far, which is kind of the story of Google, isn't it?
They say that they weren't tracking individual data points, so they weren't, going after Carmi Levy, like you couldn't identify that it was you doing the browsing. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean? What does that mean?
It means that the data is what's called aggregated. It's not personalized. That personalized elements of the data are then stripped out, so it can't be traced back to you. And so I recognize that Google has said this. I think it makes for really good PR. But we have seen many cases, some of which involved Google in the past, where so-called anonymized or aggregated or non-personalized data could then be reverse engineered and then connected back to the individual. So even though Google says not private, not specific to a particular user, we know just based on industry experience that is not always the case. And the fact that Google was collecting it and being somewhat, holding it close to its vest about how it was going about doing so or what it was doing, means that I'm not going to trust them 100%. I'll believe them, but not all the way. And I will still take measures in my own day-to-day digital life to make sure that I'm limiting the amount of information that I share with them. Don't always take what a company like Google says at face value, particularly when it has to do with data collection, because that is their lifeblood. They do not give that up easily, if at all.
Moving on to the next story that we're following this week, Amazon Web Services had a large, series of layoffs in the past week. Thousands of people for the Amazon Web Services cloud division. Looks like they're going to focus even more on the AI side of things. Obviously, that's kind of the big thing that all the tech companies are working on. One of the things it looks like they're going to kill, which I've been a big proponent of over the years because I've tried it a number of times, is their just walkout shopping technology. And they had a few of these Amazon Go stores around North America. I think they just opened one in the Calgary Saddle Dome. And essentially, these are grocery stores where you could basically log in with your credit card, Amazon account, or even the palm of your hand if you had it registered, and grab things, chocolate bar, sandwiches, drinks, and then just walk out. You didn't have to see a cashier or anything. It was all done with sensors and cameras. And now it looks like they're just phasing that out. I mean, they're still going to be in the retail side. They're going to focus on shopping cart technology. But just walk out looks like it's gone.
Yeah, just walk out is just walking out. It's one of those cases, Mike, where the promise of the technology wasn't quite realized in the real world. And in the real world, it was in theory anyway, the stores were stuffed with cameras and sensors all over the place, and they tracked your every move. And they were able to tell when you removed something from the shelf and it added it to your list, and then or tell when you put something back. It tracked you through the store. It even sort of served up suggestions to you based on your patterns of walking through the store. It was incredibly sophisticated, or at least that's what the PR releases said when it first went live a few years ago. But in reality, the technology couldn't keep up. So much data was moving back and forth that the systems struggled to keep up. In many cases, the invoice, the bill that you would get from, you get it from your regular store as soon as you clear the cash. In the case of Just Walk Out, it might have taken hours to hit your inbox. And now we know why. They had to hire a team of over 1,000 individuals in a data center in India, and they as soon as you signed in, they would watch over you remotely through their cameras, and they would take note of what you put into your basket. They would sort of handle some of those transactions because the technology simply could not. They were intervening where the technology was failing. And in many cases, the invoice, they would actually email it to you when they had time. So great promise for technology, not so great execution. Clearly, it didn't scale very well. It was incredibly expensive to set up, even though it didn't work. And Amazon decided in the end that it makes more sense to use smart shopping carts instead of smart stores. And I question that as well. I've gone to grocery stores in my area that have had pilot programs with smart carts, and they're smaller, they're finicky, staff don't know what to do with them. We've seen what customers do to regular carts, regular buggies in the parking lot. They are destroyed in just a few months, and certainly adding the technology on it certainly doesn't help. So I don't expect this to go much further either. And in fact, even though Just Walk Out, the technology is going to continue to exist in some of the stadiums. I would expect in Calgary, for example, at the arena, it'll stay live for now. In a few months or maybe even a year, they'll quietly turn that off and they'll move on. So as is always the case with next generation, electronic technology driven retail, Amazon tried something, it didn't quite stick, and now it's going to try something else.
It's interesting looking at the numbers, Carmi. They had it deployed in 20 Amazon Go stores, 40 Amazon Fresh grocery stores, and 2 Whole Foods stores. Even had some third-party outlets on board. I think 30 stores in U.S. sports stadiums. There was 12 airports and 1 university. But looking again here at the numbers, it required about 700 human reviews per 1,000 sales. So just think about that.
So 70% of every transaction needed to have a human step in to fix it. Imagine if that were the case as you're checking out at a self-service checkout. that 7 out of every items that you beat through, you've got to raise your hand and call someone over to override with their supervisor card. That's what was happening here behind the scenes, even after Amazon spent millions of dollars per store to put that technology in. This clearly wasn't ready for prime time, and it's a major botch. Amazon's amazing at deploying Star Wars-level technology in its warehouses. In all the stuff that you and I never see, Amazon literally wrote the book on how this works. But for whatever reason, when it's customer facing, when it's at retail in the real world, it's an entirely different story.
Yeah, and I never knew that there were humans in the background looking at...
neither did anyone else. It was like, surprise, we had this team, we didn't tell anyone about it. So I think they've got a bit of egg on their face because I think they tried to... You know, they probably figured, let's get the people involved while we work on the technology. Hopefully the technology will get better and eventually we won't need the people anymore. And I think they probably reached a point where they'd realize it's just not going to happen. The way we designed it, the current state of the technology, it's just not going to get to where we want it to go. We're just going to keep throwing one precious resource into it after another. We're better off making bets on other things, and hopefully those will take root.
Well, let's look at some of the other stories here on the Get Connected podcast. Again, kind of sad that Amazon Go technology is disappearing. Let's chat about Apple and RCS. So Google has made this huge push in the kind of the texting world. They don't like having the green bubbles on Apple iPhones, someone from an Android phone is messaging an Apple iPhone user. It's typically green bubbles. iPhone users see blue bubbles. And this is a major point of contention for Google. And part of that is RCS. And Apple says that they will be adhering to that kind of international standard by the fall of 2024. But does that mean that we will see blue bubbles from our Android brothers and sisters on iPhones?
Oh, I think it'll be better than it was. Whether green bubbles and blue bubbles disappear, I'm not going to bet the mortgage payment on that one. It's certainly Apple isn't going to give up everything. RCS, of course, stands for Rich Communication Services. It was, as you said, like an open industry standard for messaging, for enhanced messaging. So it supports things like activity monitors so you can see that someone is responding to you. It has a read receipt on it, so you can see if it's been delivered or if it's been read. It supports higher resolution video as well as imagery and other features that are, you know, kind of table stakes. But of course, because Apple didn't incorporate RCS into iMessage, when messages crossed between iOS devices and Android devices, a lot of that goodness got stripped out, and that's one of the reasons why we have green bubbles, because it indicates to iPhone users that you're using something that is somewhat less. Apple, as part of the Digital Markets Act, is going into effect in the European Union. The legislative landscape is changing. Apple is under increased pressure to play ball with its competitors, and this is part of it. They have agreed to incorporate RCS into an upcoming version of iOS. And presumably iPadOS as well, so version 18 expected later this year will have it. Maybe not when it first comes out, but certainly maybe the 0.1 or 0.2 released later on in the year. They're saying sometime in autumn, which will hopefully add, maybe some features like the read receipts, like the activity monitors where the bubbles are kind of jumping while someone is responding to you. So it'll get better. But I am not certain that Apple's going to give up the green bubble thing, because that is one of the major differentiators that it has to kind of show the superiority of iOS, of iPhones. And Apple will give that up kicking and screaming, and I don't think that's happening just yet.
So Google might get half of what they are
dreaming of. They'll get some. Apple will grudgingly make some concessions, but I think giving up the green bubbles is probably a stretch a little bit too far. So we'll call it a partial victory for Google, but I would expect they're not going to stop fighting this one. The laws are changing and the world is becoming a lot tighter, and Apple's going to have to find all sorts of different ways to differentiate its products without coming across as behaving in an antitrust or anti-competitive manner.
Moving on to our next story, it looks like New York City will be testing AI, artificial gun detectors, on the subway. This is interesting. I have in the past, actually, Carmi, worked with a number of companies out of Canada, Vancouver specifically, that were trying to develop this type of technology that could be used in subways, schools, stadiums, where you didn't necessarily have to go through like a, you know, the traditional metal detector. They could just set up little points, you know, around the stadium or subway system, and using different types of technology, it could detect weapons on people, like guns or knives.
And yeah, I mean, you know, every time that, every time there's a school shooting in the U.S., we always ask ourselves the question: could technology solve this? What are the answers to this vexing problem? And certainly, I think we all agree that using artificial intelligence in a creative way to identify when someone's carrying something like that would be one tool that could help. And that's what this technology is. It comes to us from a company called Evolve. That's E-V-O-L-V, no E, no second E. They're a weapons detection company based in Massachusetts. And basically what it does, it uses AI to be able to tell if someone is carrying a gun as opposed to, say, an umbrella or some other deadly weapon, so maybe a tactical knife or a bomb or some other kind of concealed weapon. So it uses electromagnetic fields, so ultra-low frequency, as well as other kinds of sensors to detect. And then it'll use artificial intelligence to run it through its training and say, okay, that looks like a weapon, so I'm going to flag that. So it sounds great, and it certainly is. It's one of those things absolutely worth trying. It is in place in a number of stadiums, for example, in New York, City Field already has it, Lincoln Center, the Metropolitan Museum of Art. It has the potential to keep us safer, but it isn't 100%. There are reports that it is really lousy. In some cases, it has looked at an umbrella and called it a gun. In other cases, it has looked at guns and missed them completely. So there are some questions about how effective it is, and certainly reports on this device. The company was investigated last year because they reportedly doctored one of the independent reports. They took out some of the negative comments on its performance. It is also being investigated by the Federal Trade Commission, as well as the Securities and Exchange Commission. So cool technology, great promise, somewhat questionable company that also has some ties to New York Mayor Eric Adams. Apparently, he is reported to be an investor in this company as well. So it's one of those things where on the surface, it looks amazing, but look beneath the surface, because this is a classic New York story, and there's a lot more to it than we're being led to believe.
Well, here's the thing, Carmi, because, you know, again, I've seen these different types of technologies. Sure, you can have these sensors installed, for example, in the New York City subway system. But then, even though you're using AI, there has to be a human at some point to actually then monitor all of that. I'm just wondering, I mean, there is a cost, obviously, to the hardware and software, I guess. But what is the human labor cost as well? I mean, this could cost hundreds of millions of dollars.
Significantly. I mean, you've got to maintain a 24/7 monitoring center with people sitting in seats who are being fed information from these detectors, from these sensors, and then they're in turn interpreting the ones that have been flagged as potentially weapons carrying. So, you know, that's a cost that only, you know, really governments can bear, but certainly not, you know, smaller organizations or less well-funded governments. That's a problem. You have to decide, is this where we want to put all of our eggs? Is this the basket that's going to keep us safer, or do we want to invest in other things? It also opens up a whole lot of questions about privacy. You know, we've discussed the concept of the mass surveillance state before. Adding AI into the mix certainly opens up the potential for significant abuses. All you want to do is take the subway, and suddenly you're being tracked six ways from Sunday. Who has access to that information? What are they doing with it? Is it being used for other things? Is law enforcement tapping into the feed and using it to just, you know, pick people out of a crowd and arrest them for things that, you know, they decide they have committed? So, you know, we need better protections in place to ensure that if you're saying this is being used for protecting regular citizens against others carrying weapons, then it has to be crystal clear and very concrete. This is where it stops. It doesn't go any further, because if those protections are in place, no city, no organization, no government agency has any business implementing this without those protections already in place.
Moving on to one of our last stories here. It looks like Vermont authorities are warning their residents to check for hidden air tags after road trips to Canada.
This is somewhat disturbing. You know, there are some reports of individuals who crossed from Vermont into Quebec and only to find out after the fact when they looked at their vehicles that someone had planted an air tag on their vehicle, either, you know, tucked it into the wheel well or behind the license plate or underneath the bumper, in the engine compartment. There are all sorts of places that anyone can just kind of stash it. And then, of course, they use the Find My app to be able to track their locations. No one knows who did this or why, but the police do surmise it's one of likely two reasons. One, they're identifying vehicles to be stolen later on. We know that Montreal, major port of exit for cars that are stolen, they end up on containers, on ships that are then sent overseas. We know there was a recent major bust in Montreal of vehicles. They found hundreds of them. So it sort of makes sense that it would be happening there. Also, potentially, people would also whoever the criminals are who are doing this, they're also leaving guns or drugs or other forms of contraband that that the victims then unknowingly smuggle across the border, and then the criminals pick it up when they're not around using the air tag to direct them. So either way, you know, you become an unintentional criminal if that's your vehicle on it. Even if you don't have an air tag or a tile or a Samsung tracker, you owe it to yourself to use the Find My app on your iPhone or the Find My device app on your Android phone to know how this works. You need to know, as part of your digital street proofing kit and anti-crime skills, because we all got to have them now, how to detect when an unknown device or like an AirTag or a tile is traveling with you. What do those notifications look like? Where do you go looking for them? How do you find them? Unfortunately, this is the age we live in, and this is what criminals are using against us.
Yeah, it's a problem with, I guess, car theft up in Canada. Carmi, we saw in this past week that the police in Montreal made a major, major bust in the port there. I think it was almost 600 cars that they recovered, holy smoke. I didn't realize how many cars are being stolen every year. I think it was like 45,000 in Ontario. Like that number blows my mind.
The numbers have absolutely spiked in recent years, partially thanks to technology. Criminals are using technologies like AirTags against us. They're identifying, in some cases, they'll identify them in a mall parking lot. The mall near my house sent out a notification last year saying exactly that, that they have received reports of a number of vehicles turning up with AirTags on them that were not installed by the owners. And then what they'll do is they'll follow the vehicle home later that evening or a few days later, and they'll steal it out of the driveway. So basically, they go shopping in the lot, and then they steal it at their convenience. And so when you sort of realize that Montreal really is a huge center for this kind of activity, that major bust, I think, illustrates just how pervasive this activity has become, and how major of a problem this has become for the entire industry and, quite frankly, to every Canadian who drives a car. It is disturbing, and unfortunately, it's only going to get worse as the technology gets better. Thankfully, Apple and Google and Samsung have updated their platforms, their apps, to be somewhat more resistant to this kind of thing. They will notify you if an unknown tracker is traveling with you after a certain amount of time. The notifications are a lot more obvious. It's easier for you as a potential victim to turn on the sound on the device so you can find it in your vehicle. So there are all sorts of updates to the software that are sort of tilting the playing field back toward us, the potential victims. But we know it's only a matter of time before criminals work around even those workarounds. And that sort of back and forth cat and mouse cops and robbers game of, you know, criminals versus victims will continue indefinitely. And we've got to keep our eyes open.
Well, talking about criminals and crime, last podcast, I did my story about how I got scammed on Facebook Marketplace. I found a really nice patio set on there and did not think whatsoever. And I actually sent a deposit to hold it. I did an e-transfer of $50, and, you know, within seconds of doing that, I just, my brain woke up and realized, hey, what's going on here? And yes, indeed, it turned out to be a scam. I filed a police report. They basically told me nothing is going to happen because they're not going to get a warrant, which they would need to track down the bank account and the Facebook account, so that they wouldn't be able to get a warrant for $50. And since then, Carmi, I have found two additional ads on Facebook Marketplace. I wasn't even looking. Again, it just appeared in my feed because obviously it knows I like patio furniture now. And this, the exact same kind of scam. It was a different patio set, but I looked at, you know, I'm not dumb. You know, patio sets I've looked at before. And so they had this one picture, and it was the same picture for these two different ads. One was in Victoria, one was in Vancouver. And I looked at this patio set, and one was offering it for $500. And if you did any kind of homework, that patio set had a fire pit, a gas fire pit as well. And one of the ads was asking $500. The other was asking $200. And it was new. And so if you did any kind of homework, those patio sets would go for like $4,000 with that. Mm. Or more with that fire pit. Yeah. And so same thing again. I looked into the people, you know, the profiles behind it, and they had no history. And I messaged these people and, you know, hey, I'm interested. And same thing. Yeah, we need a deposit. We need you to e-transfer a deposit. And see, this scam is very prevalent on Facebook Marketplace, not just for patio furniture, but I can't even imagine the thousands of dollars being scammed on a daily basis.
For instance, and the fact that it's like they're asking for a relatively small deposit, that doesn't raise people's antenna. So they make $50 from one victim, $40 from another, and it adds up. It's a constant revenue stream for them, but it's not big enough for most people to go, oh, it's I was scammed out of thousands of dollars, so I'm going to call the cops. No, for $50, most people just let it go. So it's one of those crime trends that falls below the radar. It's increasingly pervasive, largely based on the fact that Facebook Marketplace makes it incredibly easy to shield who you are and to pretend to be someone else, because Facebook does not validate accounts to any degree, which is a longstanding problem. And then, you know, it sort of continues. And so you realize you've been scammed. It doesn't matter. They've already moved on to 10 other victims. And it sort of continues below the attention of law enforcement, and they don't see it as a major problem when they're going after ransomware scams that are, you know, in the six and seven figures. So just because it's a relatively small dollar amount doesn't mean that it isn't causing huge damage across platforms. I'm seeing it all over my Facebook feeds as well. And it's pretty obvious every single time that I do, you know, a little bit of background research on these individuals. Like you said, they have no profile. Their account was recently set up using photos that were clearly scanned from somewhere else, because Google reverse image search says that they're not their photos. That, you know, it's usually a deal that's too good to be true, designed to get your attention. They always ask, and, you know, you nailed it as well. They ask for a deposit almost immediately. And that should be an immediate tell for most people as well, that, you know, the fact that they're going for that money immediately, it's you know, a legitimate seller would not, and that is not the case. So, and it's also difficult to locate them elsewhere. In other words, why do they exist only in Facebook or Facebook Marketplace, and yet I can't find them anywhere else? They don't have a Google. Like, I can't Google them. I can't find them on LinkedIn. They don't have a website. I can't find their address. And in some cases, I found one guy trying to sell patio furniture in my neighborhood, and he lived two provinces away. So locality is an issue as well. And or at least he said he lived two provinces away, and he probably figured no one was going to be even looking at the profile. So there are many tells here. And I think the one takeaway is always make sure that you absolutely know who it is that you're dealing with before you engage with them on Facebook Marketplace, because Facebook itself, Meta, the company, has shown no desire whatsoever to address the false account scourge that is absolutely racing across its platform. This has been going on for years, and Meta is not fixing it. There's no law that makes them fix it, and it makes it just the absolute hunting grounds for these scammers to do what they do, and we've got to be aware.
They have to do something about it, Carmi, because, you know, you and I are just kind of scratching the surface on that. And people who do get scammed you know, I'm betting 9 times out of 10, they don't even know where to report this crime, or they don't report the crime because it's just too much of a hassle. And so it's costing Canadians money that they're being scammed out of it. And can you just imagine, like, even the few that are reported, just the wasted resources, you know, on the police side, you know, taking the police reports that obviously never go anywhere. So it has to change. So I'm actually doing a story with Global News out here in BC.
Cool.
Yeah. So I'm working with Andrea, who is one of the consumer reporters for Global BC. And I'm looking forward to just kind of giving my my story out there, and, you know, hopefully educating people. But, you know, just hoping that maybe some politicians wake up as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, certainly having a legislative backdrop, the right laws on the books would certainly help. Because I think up until now, it's, and, you know, there's plenty of blame to go around. And certainly, you know, you blame the criminals because they're the ones engaged in the activity. But the platforms are making it easy for this kind of crime to happen. And there aren't, the criminals are exploiting known weaknesses in their technologies to ply their trade, to trick us into believing that they are, in fact, legitimate vendors. And so the fact that this has gone on for years and the platforms have not changed their tune, have not introduced better protections, to me, is unconscionable. And so I would certainly love for politicians to recognize that this is a priority, that Canadians are being taken for huge amounts of money, and that it is compromising our ability to lead proper, safe, digital lives. And it's problematic. And you know, we shouldn't discount it. It's not about patio furniture. It's about our ability to go online and not be scammed at every turn. And unfortunately, because companies like Meta refuse to take this issue seriously, that's exactly what's happening.
That's all the time we have left here for the podcast. I want to thank Carmi Levy again for joining me. We will see you again next time. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and visit our website, getconnectedmedia.com. Mike and Carmi logging off.